Okay, can we pause it at some point?
Yes, we can.
When I want crisps or something.
But also we can...
I'm going to see if I got any nuts. All right, okay.
We can also...
I've got those books that sound pretentious. No. I'm going to explain the books by saying that in my previous house I had about at least 5,000 books.
Right, we'll get onto that.
Yeah, that is an edited down fucking... Hey. I'll tell you.
Okay, I'm ready when you are, Russ.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Ross Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm really grateful.
Why are you really grateful?
Because we've just had a tour in East London
around
the house of our guest today.
Yes, it's been amazing. An amazing art tour and a colour tour. It's been one of the most colourful houses I've ever been in.
Me too. And it's not only got great art, but this guest also has incredible design.
And taste
and furniture and everything, even like the carpets, like the colour of the carpets. I'm super happy about
it. It's like design and architecture is in her blood.
It is indeed. And that's also one of the reasons I wanted to invite her onto the show, because I heard an interview with you once where you said that when you were younger, you tried to like improve yourself through learning, and you went to the library and you were like teaching yourself as much as you could about design. You were just trying to improve yourself, and that is what this whole podcast is about: self-improvement through art,
through
making
education.
The world a better place.
Yes.
So we would like to welcome Janet Street Porter.
Hi, Janet.
What a build-up. It is true that I was a self-improver, and also I was an incredible snob, and I couldn't believe that I was my parents' child, and that's what kept me going. I used to go to the library after school and work in the library, because that way you could read all the books that were on the adults-only list, or you had to, you know, there were banned books and books that you had to... be over 18 to read and stuff like that. So by working in the library, I had access to a lot of stuff.
Would you say you was like Matilda?
I didn't like that show.
You didn't like the show, but the actual story of Matilda.
I've never read it. I only got to the interval. I couldn't stand the music.
Well, if it stuck with it, she was a little girl who felt like she wasn't her like parents' child, and she bettered herself and educated herself and went to the library and was fascinated with literature and education, and she went on and did amazing things, you think, into the future.
Oh, well, I managed to do that without reading the story.
Amazing.
No, I don't want to be negative about the musical, but I like the costumes, I like the dancing, I couldn't stand the music. Sorry about that.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Fulham. My parents had half a house. We didn't have very much money. My dad was an electrician and my mother was a school dinner lady. And the top part of our house was rented out to a bus conductor and his family. So we had the ground floor and half the first floor. And then the other half of the first floor and the top floor belonged to them. And they had the bathroom in their half. we could use the bathroom on Sunday afternoons.
Wow.
And they had the inside toilet as well, so we only had an outside toilet. But now, you know, I don't want to boast about my working class credentials, but that's what they were.
Yeah. Did you have books in the house and stuff?
Yeah, my mother had a lot of Reader's Digest books that you got, you know, and books that if you were in the Reader's Digest book club, you got.
Got sent.
Yeah, you got sent. And I had a godmother who my mother had met during the war, who was one of the reasons I was a self-improver, because every Saturday I would be sent on the bus to my auntie Eileen's in Notting Hill Gate, and we used to try and she wanted me to speak French on Saturdays.
Wow. So do you think auntie Eileen is the reason that you saw the potential?
Yes, definitely, because she was a fantastic culture snob, so we would meet up in Notting Hill Gate, and then we go to Queensway and we'd eat at the French Patisserie in Queensway, and we go to Whiteley's Food Hall and buy French food, and she'd buy the French newspaper, and I'd have to try and tell her what it was about, and then we go back to her flat on Westbourne Grove and we'd have Edith Piaf or God knows what, Charles.
What age was you at this, doing this?
12, 13.
Wow.
Now, she was a big... influence on my life, because I would go to the Continental Cinemas with her. We'd go to the one in Notting Hill Gate, or we'd go to the Renoir in...
Brunswick.
Yeah. No, there was one in Regent Street that has now been restored. So I went to loads of foreign movies, and I was seeing things that were probably quite unsuitable. I saw lots of Cocteau movies. I saw Beauty and the Beast when I was about 12 or 13.
And Cocteau did a version of Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah, original. It's the really wacko, surrealist version where hands hold all the plates.
You love that, don't you, as well, because of the soundtrack?
Yes, what happened was that Philip Glass took the Cocteau film and composed later on.
Oh, later on, yeah.
Philip Glass composed an imaginary soundtrack to it, and he got singers to sing to the subtitles.
Wow.
So they did it at the Barbican a few years ago, and they show the film, and then the singers sing the soundtrack.
So good. It's
amazing. Did two films, Philip Glass. He did a horror movie as well.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
Wow. And so did your auntie take you to art galleries as well?
No, not so much. She was more interested in the theatre. I went to, there was an international theatre season, so we'd go to the theatre in plays in French and stuff like that. So she was a big influence till I was about 14 or 15. And then I would keep diaries of all the books that I read. And I did this program on the radio, actually, about my teenage diaries. I probably was quite an epic snob. So I'd write all the books that I'd read that year as I read them, all the galleries that I went to. Yeah. And that was at the same time that I'd be writing Saw Terry at the Chip Shop. So it's like completely schizophrenic personality. But when I was about 15 or 16, I got a boyfriend who was studying architecture, and from then on we went to loads of galleries and stuff.
And I heard that you were really, really into like cartoons as well, or comic books.
Yeah, there was a big exhibition at the ICA of comic strip art, and originally I think it came from Paris, and I remember doing something for the BBC about it when I was about 20. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I do. I've got quite a lot of books of comic strip art from that era.
So. But like the political stuff, or like...
No, really, like Winsor McCay, like Little Nemo in Slumberland, fantasy stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So around the time of, like, would it have been Asterix, or would that have been later?
No, I was not a fan of Asterix. I think it was just the French... France was one of the first countries that really recognised American graphic art, almost at a time when it wasn't being revered there. Mm. And then they had this show at the ICA where, you know, you'd see frames where Little Nemo is a brilliant example, where the whole page of the book, he was in Slumberland, so his bed grew legs and walked him to Slumberland. So actually the strip itself, the complete strip, was an artwork. So a little bit after that, I really got into R. Crumb and all of those.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was afterwards, yeah.
Cool.
I think R. Crumb is a phenomenal artist. I mean, he's seen as an artist in his own right now with David Zwirner, isn't he? I mean, that positioned him as like... within the lineage of art history of what he's doing. And especially like Rebecca Warren as well is very, very inspired, as a friend of all of ours.
Yeah.
She's very inspired by R. Crumb's work.
I think he was so like in your face. It was really fantastic. And I just think that at that time, I went from, I remember really clearly going to the big pop art show at the Tate Gallery and being really knocked out, and then they had a big show about surrealism. So these are shows that I saw between the ages of 16 and 18.
Wow.
So by the time I got to college at 18, I had a pretty good art education, because I'd done A-level art anyway, and I did history. I did history of architecture as well.
Design, was it as well? Or?
No, I did history of architecture as one of the papers in my art A-level. So I had to teach myself, because there was no one at my school to teach that. So it was, I was really in my own world. Yeah. And then when I got to the Architectural Association, it was like I'd gone home. I was with my peer group before when I was at college. Before when I was at school, I always felt a little bit weird. But when I arrived at college in 1965, it was fantastic. And we had artists like Gustav Metzger doing performance art in our college. He burnt the pianos and did all of that, destroyed the pianos.
When you were at college?
When I was at college, of the Architectural Association. And then we would do these events like we had these carnivals once a year where we build huge sets and stuff like that. We did a Prohibition one and a Wild West one. So it was a really exciting time, 65 to 67. And then I was in Blow Up because Antonioni came to our college looking for people to be in the film. It was a really exciting time, definitely.
Did you have to audition?
Oh, well, the thing is that Antonioni came and chose us, came to the bar at the AA and he went, look, you've got to come to the audition in Porchester Bars because of the unions. And then we were all, Manolo's in it, I'm in it, Piers Goff's in it. Loads of us are in that particular scene in the nightclub. But my big complaint was, oh, God, we had to start really early and we go all the way out to Pinewood. But I got extra money because I danced. With the black guy and all the others were going, what's she got? Well, I was wearing my own clothes, so I'm wearing a silver coat that I made.
Wow.
You made?
Yeah, I made clothes at Carnaby Street in my first year at college.
Right, okay, let's just sort this out timeline-wise. Why did you choose architecture, do you think? Why was that your persuasion at the time?
Because no one from my school had ever done it.
Yeah.
And it was far more, it was very difficult to get in. You had to sit an entrance exam and not a lot of girls ever got accepted. It was 95 boys and 5 girls in my first year. So there was an upside to that. Was on paper sounds great, but actually a load of boys the same age as you are not that attractive. But they were such good fun. And I've stayed friends with some of the people that I was at college with still, 50 years later, we still go on holiday. Piers has designed house for me, and I'm seeing him this Thursday.
But what was it about the architecture? What certain buildings or design was you triggered by?
I love the idea of controlling a complete environment, and I suppose what's happened since then is I did 2 years, and then I took a year off because I wanted to do my third year in New York. And I got a job on a teenage magazine, Petticoat. And then within 6 months, I was offered a job on the Daily Mail as deputy fashion editor.
Wow.
So I was like 21 years old. And I kept all my links with architecture because I was married to an architectural photographer. I wrote about architecture for Design Magazine, Queen Magazine, and all those magazines. And so I didn't really lose my relationship with it. I just love architecture.
And now?
Well, I built 2 houses. I built one with Piers and one with David Adjaye. Well, don't really want to go there.
We're not talking about that. Okay. We can try. We can try and get that.
Argument.
Yeah. Oh, you had an argument with him?
Yes. Well, the house was quite problematic. But I've ended up living, we're sitting in a Georgian house because it's calm.
You think because the energy of the architecture of this house keeps it calm?
The environment's calm. It's on a square that's closed to traffic. I've got a garden. Because of my life so intense, when I'm at home, I want a place that's very calm.
Refuge. Yeah, totally.
Well, so I just want somewhere that it's not going to be screaming at me.
Something I found really interesting was that before you went to the AA, to the Architectural Association, not Alcoholics Anonymous, just to make that clear, but before you went there, you actually used to photograph yourself. Like, you would go out on the streets and take pictures of buildings. So you were actually creating, like, photography yourself. which I
yeah, I did a portfolio to get in there. I photographed walks that I did. I photographed buildings. I made what now they'd be called mood boards. I made scrapbooks.
Right.
So as of before that, I'd written diaries.
Have you still got all those?
Yes.
So cool.
I have got them in Yorkshire. Yeah.
I love that idea though that you were actually like.
Well,
you
I know, collected took, picked the camera things up. That I would put together that were like what I was interested in. So it might be pictures from fashion magazines or drawings or, yeah, art catalogues. I've got all the catalogues for all the art shows I've been to since I was 14.
Wow. No way.
So what was the first art show then?
I used to go up to Bond Street and be really frightened to go into the galleries in Cork Street because it was quite formidable. But we, you know, I would go to the Tate, I'd go to the British Museum. I went to the Science Museum. And then when I was about 14, I joined the sketching club at the Natural History Museum. Mm-hmm. I loved that. You could go in on Saturdays and draw.
What were you drawing?
Stuff that was in the Natural History Museum.
Oh, I
see. So you draw the exhibits. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, cool. Sketching club.
So it's kind of like life drawing without the nude models.
Yeah, and you know what? I love the museums. And for 6 years, I was on the trustee of the Science Museum quite recently. I just did. Yeah, I was one of the.
Do they still do these classes? These drawing
I don't know. I just feel that the visual arts have been, you know, I've ended up as a journalist and broadcaster, but my whole 100% of my background and my interest lies in art and design, definitely.
What?
And I mean, I've had four husbands and they've all said, I'll go into a room and if it's not the way I want it, I can't go in it, I can't be in it. And that's one of the reasons why I imagine I'm very difficult to live with.
Right.
Because I have to have it all the way it has to be. And if I would come in this room now and I'd look at those bookshelves and I'd think, oh, they need a bit of a re-sorting out.
I'm the same as you. I'm very kind of OCD with positioning of things. It has to be positioned correctly. Now I will walk around the room in various angles and then move it. People think I'm a freak. They come to my place. You come to my apartment.
I was just about to say, you're meeting your kindred spirit here in Russell.
Oh, well,
because every time I go to his house, the art's moved around. So if you've got your portrait behind you here, like literally next time I came, it would be over there. Like it's never in the same place. And books, particularly everything, just moves around.
Well, what I find is, When I actually built a house on a bomb site designed by Piers Gough, that was fantastic because we could make a house that's like a film set. Yeah. So, you know, you're an actor, so you appear in films, but other people are directing them. That must be really annoying because I have to appear on television directed by other people and I know what it's like because you're not in total control. But when you design a house with an architect that you really respect, they are interpreting your personality so that when you open the front door of the house, you're in your own movie. Mm. And that is so good.
That's so sexy. I love
it.
That's
so sexy. It's really sexy. Yeah. So the house that I had in Britain Street, the door was made of railway sleepers. Mm. And it had like, the whole thing was like a portcullis. So when you went in, it was a really hostile house. So the idea was, it said to people, don't even think about ringing the fucking doorbell because it's not going to be answered. And then when you open the door, it was like being in a film set. Yeah.
Wow.
It was exciting. I mean, I was sad to sell it. The only reason I sold that house is because they knocked down all the buildings around it. So I lost my privacy and... I think it comes back to what I said earlier, that the house, your home has got to be your sanctuary and you've got to be able to wear any old shit you want to wear in it and you've got to be with the taste, your taste. And, of course, a lot of people haven't got the guts to have any taste or they're not...
aware of their own taste.
They're not confident about it. Well, I'm mega confident.
Oh, my God. Well, you can see that on this tour because the colours and everything, you're so vivacious. The way that you've put everything together is incredible.
Well, to have a shocking pink kitchen, right? When I came to this house, I had an architect help me out with some of the design and then I had the kitchen designed by German kitchen designers. And my brief was just two blocks. It's all got to be in two blocks, so it's just two rectangles. And then the guy who designed it said, okay, I see this kitchen in dark grey or some old bollocks like that. I went, look, it's going to be shocking pink. Get over it. And he looked really, really sick. And then he,
wow.
And he went, sick. And then he said, well, I see the worktop in kind of grey. I went, it's going to be white, full of glitter. Because that's me. I want my kitchen to be jolly and happy. Anyway, but it's a Georgia now, so I went, look, just don't even fucking think about it. It's going to be shocking pink, so that's it.
So something that always really struck me about you, I remember like 10 years ago when I first started working for Carl's Gallery and we did our first Frieze art fair together.
Yeah.
And Carl's always been a bit hesitant to do art fairs in the sense that he's not... a natural born like salesman in a way, like he's much more critical and
you are though. You're
whereas
a salesman.
I love selling art. And
yeah,
I
you're
sell,
really
sell,
good
sell.
At selling because you're nice.
But I love
Carl,
chatting.
Carl can't. Carl's not confident at having to do that slight bit of obsequiousness. No, I can't.
Well, he doesn't like small talk. Which,
no, he doesn't.
Which
have
actually,
any. I like.
I've learnt to really respect. I think it's a brilliant thing that he does. He's very. That's just who he is. But I remember you came on the booth the first year I was working there. And, you know, when you walked on, I didn't know you at all. And I might have seen you a few years before at, like, Tracy's events or, yeah. I don't know, White Cube or whatever. But I didn't know you. And to me, you were this kind of, like, cultural figure that I'd grown up with on TV. Mm. And I was really like, wow, you're at Frieze Art Fair. But I found it quite shocking at the time. And then you ran up to Carl and you're having this chat with him. And I was like, how the hell does Carl know Janet Street Porter? Mm. And then over the years, I've kind of got to see you out more and more. And I saw you at the Turner Prize recently at the opening. And I loved the fact that you are so much more than just, like, you know, being a television presenter or all of those things
that's only a fraction of what
it's
I do.
A tiny part of it, though. And also that idea that people are often, like, have very strong opinions about you because you're very outspoken yourself, which, again, I really respect and I kind of admire. But I love this idea that actually there's a kind of shyness to you, which I've seen more through hanging out with you in the art world in a way. There's a kind of, like, you're very interested in a kind of thoughtful way, not in just an outspoken way. And I've always really loved that about you. There's a kind of like duality in your...
Yeah, but I'm very private. People, yeah. Because bear in mind now I'm on TV, daytime television, and I've done a lot of reality shows.
Right.
Everybody thinks they know you. And every day of my life, I mean, they must do it with Russell too. I have people come up to me and they don't just say hello, they grab hold of me and they think, oh, it's made their day. But, you know, those people are only interacting with me in a very superficial way because I've had the same friends for many, many years,
right.
And I'm a very private person. So it's a bit of a dichotomy. There's the person who's on television that is, you know, out there and has opinions on TV, and then there's the person who writes a column, and then there's the person who's completely different, who could sit and talk about Len Dayton or talk about, you know, quite niche things, if you like.
Yeah.
And get on really well with quite extraordinarily wide range of people. But I know the people I don't like and I don't hang out with them.
Right,
so
right,
I've
right.
got quite specific likes.
Do you still have a major thirst for knowledge, still wanting to know everything?
Yeah, I would like to... I've written that my big obsession about aging, obviously because I'm 72 now and I feel like, why haven't I aged like most people of my generation? And it's because I don't look back particularly. I mean, when you're asking me about my past, I'm having to like rummage around and try and remember it. Because for me, the priority is what's going to happen next and what I haven't done yet and what I might do and who I might meet and
yeah.
what I might see, you know, so I'm open to all sorts of things. So I spend every day reading and I cut newspapers up and I cut stuff up. I've got all files.
You still got a scrapbook? You still keep like a mood board?
I keep files on loads of things that I'm interested in. Yeah. Places
so cool.
I'm going to go to that I haven't been yet. Designers that I look at their stuff online and craftsmen and people like that. So I'm really interested in that.
So you're still abreast with fashion and you're very abreast with art.
Fashion, definitely. I would like to, you know, I'm always looking at stuff and I've stayed in touch with people from, you know, that I've known for ages. Yeah. Yeah, I'm always looking for younger designers. Yeah, definitely.
For yourself, or just out of interest?
I might wear them, I might not. It might not be right for me. But like Gareth Pugh, I loved Gareth Pugh's work. And I went to, you know, I went to one of his shows and I just thought he was brilliant. Because he was like a theatrical, well, he just had a whole vision of what clothes were all about. There is a big crossover, obviously, between art and fashion.
I always found it really annoying in the art world that some people, like, if you look like you were into fashion, in the sense that I've always been interested in new ideas, basically. It doesn't matter what form, whether it's craft, you know, like, as in, like, pottery or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really ever see boundaries between different mediums, if that makes sense. So like, yeah. And fashion particularly, but often people would really be snobby about it. And I'd be like, I think it's so small-minded to not look to other...
Ceramics is a big area where that's gone. When I started collecting ceramics in like the 60s and there was people like Carol McNichol and Richard Slee, they were very much regarded as ceramicists. Well, now they are artists and their works are in museums. And, you know, in America, people like Kenny Price, you know, he was always regarded as an artist. It was only over here. We had to stick them in that dreadful Crafts Council, you know.
Which really annoyed me. And I'm so glad it's a great example, actually, because the ceramics are now, you know, being respected as they should, you know.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Art, the arts podcast, and we're here today with Budweiser beer, and we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and is really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a four-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and Talk Art with Sir Peter Blake.
Do you think Grace and Perry's had a lot to do with that within the British market?
Maybe.
Maybe, but actually, yeah.
In my house in Yorkshire, I've got some other things that he did, like embroideries. He made a lovely handbag that was a man and a woman handbag that was a limited edition. And they found it hard to sell. I think he did it for Selfridges, and I was there straight away. I think I bought about three. I gave one to Elton, I know that, and he went back and bought some more.
No way.
So yeah, good. It was a man-woman handbag. It was wicked. Really cute.
So I always really like Grayson's collages.
Yeah.
Yes.
He made all these great photo collages. Yeah.
Well, they're very similar. We've just walked around your house, and you've got a big Jake and Dinos Chapman collection. I always find that them collages always slightly remind me of Jake and Dinos, with the kind of intensity of all the figures and all the characters kind of doing their own business, getting around the world. And they're quite like haunting, some of the imagery that Grayson uses.
Yeah, that's why I like them, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the narratives and the story is so strong with them.
I bought some great collages at the last, I always go to the art boot sale, boot sale in Folkestone, and I bought some really good collages that are strange Victorian engravings with photos montaged onto them, and I can't remember who did them, but I always get quite a few bits and pieces at those fairs. I love them.
Oh, wicked.
Do you try and live with everything you've got? You must have quite a big
I've got a few now. I go to student shows, not enough now. I've got some that are not up. I've got one that's I don't know what the process is. It's like an image on metal, big sheet of metal. That's upstairs here because I haven't found anywhere to put it. And I've just bought...
But it's like aluminium, like a photograph on aluminium, or
yes, it's on metal. Yeah,
what would they call that?
I don't know. I don't wish you hadn't said that because I'm
going to drive
exposing my knowledge. I've got like daguerreotype in my head. I've got
Royal College show. Yeah, I bought it at a Royal College show, and I've got some photographs from Royal College shows as well. And this morning in my house in Whitstable, I've got my bedroom's got some great photographs in it. I've got a photograph of Patrick Heron's studio that a Cornish photographer took. And then I've got a photograph of the Bristol Channel, the estuary between Bristol and Wales, that at dawn, and it's by a photographer that only photographs that over and over again in all sorts of different
ways. In an obsessive way.
Like. Yeah, and because my bedroom is right on the water and I look out to my left and I've got the horizon there and I've got this other horizon, and then I've got another photograph, a series of images that are from someone from the Royal College of different flight patterns of birds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I really... In that house, I've also got a Hamish Fulton of walking, a map of all his walks, because that's my other big passion.
You're a rambler.
Yes. I've got Gary Hume that I bought from Counter Editions.
Yeah.
A Vicious, the boxing one.
Yeah, it's great.
Michael Craig Martin of Handcuffs, that big one he did of handcuffs and a chairs in it. Yeah, I mean, everywhere's a bit different. I'll tell you something I haven't told you about that's really, really funny. In my house in Yorkshire, it's an old dairy farm. And because it's got, some of the rooms have got the original stone walls, you know, they were milking sheds and stuff like that. And it's not, they're not big rooms, they're cosy. Anyway, Gordon Watson, the art dealer, is an old friend of mine. I haven't seen him for a bit because he's so, what's the word? I've got to be very careful now because I don't want to offend him. He has shit lists and you're in and you're out. I'm probably out at the moment. Anyway, Gordon rang me one day to say he was having a sale of stuff from his warehouse that he, you know, he had too much stock and it went into Sotheby's and he went, there's one thing you're really going to like. And I went along to Sotheby's and there was this tapestry of Adam and Eve and they're black, and Adam has got a massive erection. And these are, it's a French tapestry that was done in the early 50s, I would guess. And it's in the style of Cocteau, really. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of French surrealist. Mm-hmm. And Adam's got his finger up Eve's fanny. Anyway, it's about 5 foot by. It's quite big.
The fanny or the whole thing?
The tapestry about 5 by 4.
Wow.
Anyway, I bought it, and when I went to collect it from Sotheby's, they went, "Thank God you bought it."
We didn't know.
And then all the porters said to me it's their favourite thing in the whole sale.
Oh. And do you live with that in Yorkshire?
Yes, in my living room.
That's a classic. Oh my God.
I've got with it, I've got some other Adam and Eves that I've collected over the years. I've got some old, you know, Adam and Eve prints and stuff. But
have you always been like into this idea of Adam and Eve?
No, it's just like they went, I already had them. I'd bought them at the antiques fair in Leeds in the 60s or 70s.
Wow.
So I've got that. Yeah, the tapestry is fantastic. And I've also got in that house.
We've got to see a picture of this tapestry.
Oh, no, it sounds amazing.
I've got some Tony O'Malley watercolours from St Ives because I spent a lot of time in St Ives when I was at college because Patrick Heron's daughter Catherine was my best friend and she still is one of my best friends. And so I've got some Patrick Heron watercolours and gouaches. And then through Patrick, I met Tony O'Malley. And I've got some of his paintings on shoeboxes from the 60s.
Wow, so it's really evident then that you're like a proper collector.
Yes.
I
mean,
it doesn't seem like that to me. It's only my life and things people that I encounter.
Isn't that the best kind of collection?
Yeah.
It kind of like
they're all about
memory
so
of
personal,
your journey through life. I think it's the best. And talking about that, behind you right now, above your beautiful fireplace, are 6 portraits of you. Are they of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were of you. I'm sitting here thinking, I thought I heard you say
it earlier.
No, that
sounds like a massive ego trip.
No, but they're not.
But anyone listening, we must say it's me as a demonic monster.
Yeah.
So it's not the slightest bit flattering.
No,
it's
and I didn't have to question if it was you. I mean, it kind of could be you, but it could also not be
you. It's me as a massively fanged horror show woman.
Incredible.
Yeah, and they're like me screaming out at you. Yeah, well, they were... the history of them is that in 2004, I was going to do a one-woman show at the Edinburgh Festival. I'd written a book about my mother. I could only write it once she died, so it was a bit of settling scores, and it was very cathartic. So I decided to do a one-woman show about my relationship with my mother. And Neil Tennant came up with a brilliant idea of calling it All the Rage.
Mm.
And Damien had done some drawings of me before, and I wanted to use one for the poster. I rang him up, and he said, "No, come round, I'll do a new poster." So I went to the studio, and he did so many drawings, and while I was there for hours, he did watercolours, drawings, photographs, and then I went, "Look, what..." He said, "Leave it to me, I'll just do the poster." And when the poster arrived, it was a combination of all these, it was a combination of all these elements, and it had dots all over it as well.
Oh, wow.
Anyway.
And this is Damien Hirst, for anyone who doesn't realise who Damien is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Damien
only the world's
Hirst,
most famous artist. Yeah.
And he said, "That's it." I went, "Well, that's brilliant. You know, you can just have it." He just did it. And
wow.
Sent me all the artwork and everything, you know, all the, not the actual artwork, but the stuff to reproduce it.
Yeah.
And then about 2 or 3 years later, I got a call from his secretary and said, "Oh, Damien wants to give you something." And he gave me some of the things that had made up the image.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And
so all of these did actually make the poster?
No, they didn't. There were so many. He did
wow.
So many.
So have you got more?
No, he just gave me these ones and another drawing that's upstairs.
Oh, yeah, we saw that. To be honest, I think these are my favourite Damien Hirst works I've ever seen.
So cool.
I had no idea he made work like
that. They are. I've got
brilliant.
Some drawings that he has just done a book, hasn't he, of the drawings he did on napkin rings and menus and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
So he would always, when we went out to dinner, he'd always be drawing on the tablecloth or on the...
And he would take a picture of it, and then that's been archived now part of this book. Or did he keep the original?
I don't know, but I know he's done a book of drawings of Frank, his manager, Frank Dunphy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So have these been photographed before? Would like these out in public? No. So could we take a picture of you today with these?
I wouldn't be... Well, I suppose you could, but
It'd be great.
They're on my website anyway,
are
but not with me in it. I think it looks such an ego trip.
It's so cool because you've got them framed in plexi and they just look really... It's so cool.
Yeah.
So what about on this side of the house? I'm just going to start talking about what's in this beautiful house. But the Richard Hamilton.
Hamilton toaster was a birthday present from my third husband. And he knew how much I love Richard Hamilton. And it was just summed up the 60s. It's the toaster and it's the most classic image because it's the artist proof of the original time that he did it, because Richard Hamilton went on and did other versions of that print.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah.
I love it though, because I feel like it really sums up your kind of everything you love in a way.
Right. Well, actually, I did have a lot of pop art. I had the Joe Tilson A to Z box, which was given to me by Alistair McAlpine. I had a lot of Joe Tilsons. I've still got one Joe Tilson, Wooden Labyrinth.
Wow.
I had Jim Dine. The ones that's here, I had some Kit Eyes, all prints. I had a huge collection of pop art. I had quite a lot of Alan Jones's. I had, because my first husband did several books with him, and Alan was a very close friend. And then Alan did my portrait. I still have that.
Really?
Yeah.
You have a portrait of you by Alan Jones?
Yeah.
That is cool.
It's Alan did my portrait for the cover of Studio.
Oh.
And he made me into Fan. He did a print, and then it's like a multi-layered thing. Oh. So I've still got a painting somewhere. Not sure where.
So is Damien a pal of yours still? Is he someone you...
No, I do see him, and we're always friends, but I don't see him regularly. No, we have been good friends, but I wouldn't... The people that I really hang out with, they're kind of... Artists, you think you've got to allow them their space, so I wouldn't be ringing people up.
Right. Because we've seen you at Tracy's events, and we're all friends with Rebecca Warren, as I was saying earlier.
Yeah, well, Jay Joplin was a really good friend of mine, a very, very good friend, because he had a house near us in Yorkshire. And Jay, I go back a long way with Jay. I love Jay. Yeah.
Jay Joplin is the director of White Cube Gallery.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were saying that you went to one of his really early exhibitions when he had the tiny little gallery before it became
Duke
Street, yeah.
When Jay showed Jake and Dinos Chapman at that gallery, I went in and I can't remember what I paid for them, but it was quite a lot of money for me at the time.
Right.
But I made the decision that the disasters of war was such an important... Well, it really resonated with me, because up to then, I'd not bought any Jake and Dinos work. Well, I just thought that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I just thought, I loved the whole thing. I liked taking the Goya imagery. I liked what they'd done with it. I liked the fact it was really extreme. It took no prisoners. And I thought, I can live with that. I want that in my bedroom. I want to look at that every day. I will never be bored by it. And people, when they see that I have in my bedroom, 70 images like that, they can't believe it. But I find it really calming. But then, you know, I listen to Bach, or I listen to Philip Glass. You know, I find it works quite well. It's calm.
Are you pals with them? Have you hung out with them?
Oh, over the years, yeah, definitely, yeah.
So you were there during the YBA kind of explosion, right?
Oh, yeah, and I remember when the show opened in New York, going to the Brooklyn Museum for the opening of Sensation in New York. It was hilarious. I remember going with Hugh Grant.
Really? Hugh Grant?
Yeah. I remember going to dinner afterwards, and it was very... it was a big party. At the time, it was an exciting time, definitely, that whole era. And every opening that Jay had was a really, really big event. I mean, definitely.
You felt like a palpable buzz at the time, like retrospectively.
Yeah, I think what's happened is that, in a way, all the art fairs have taken all the air out of that. Right. I mean, now there's too many shows. There's too much... and art fairs and don't appeal to me. I mean, they're like going to the Ideal Home exhibition with lots of little cubicles or something. Mm. It's not what I really relate to.
You don't like doing art fairs as much anymore, do you?
Not as much anymore, no. I just find it a bit, I don't know, I just find it so impersonal in some ways. And you don't really get much time to talk to people. They're always like on to the next thing. They're sort of looking over your shoulder.
And also, don't you think people are buying art for like, now that a lot of people buy art because they think it's part of a social strategy, it's to connect you to other people. Yeah. Whereas I bought art because...
You loved it.
Yeah. Well, it's not that I'm saying I'm better than them, but I think the reasons are very bound up in my background and what formed me as a person. And if I didn't have my art around me, I'd be a bit miserable.
Right. Same. I'm exactly the same. Yeah, I have to live with...
Me too. I sort of, you surround yourself with the things you love
objects,
in order to...
It's not all art, is it? Because I've also got a Devil Bendy toy that I wouldn't like to lose.
A what? What's it called?
Devil Bendy.
What's that?
It's a Bendy toy that's the devil made of yellow
like,
plastic.
You say that like we should all have one of those and we know about that.
I got one for Elton actually because I liked it so much.
You seem to buy a lot of things for Elton. You seem very generous.
No, he buys me stuff too.
What has he bought you before?
He and David gave me those Chinese figures, which I really like.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, the Han Dynasty.
Wow. He's got an incredible collection, right?
I mean, I like his photography collections. Are really amazing.
Yeah.
And he bought some of that great photography really early on. I mean, and he put a lot of thought into it. And also back people like Chuck Close. He bought a lot of work by Chuck Close really early on. No, and then he's moved into colour photography.
The photography show at Tate was just incredible.
I thought it was good because he curated that show, although they had their curators. It was absolutely hung the way he wanted it hung, and it showed the breadth of his taste.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he's someone who goes out and finds out about new people. Because I've been around the Biennale with Elton, and I've watched how he was really early on with Chinese artists and Chinese photographic artists. He really got excited by people early on.
The thing I really respected about that show was this idea of taking care of art and, you know, the actual photography and looking after it, because they can so easily get destroyed and fall apart and get wet and all these things. And the fact that he's bought all of that amount of work and way more, because that's
historical,
obviously a tiny
pieces,
yeah, that's what
well,
I mean.
Yeah.
He's preserving history.
Man
and
Ray,
I think I have so much respect for people who become successful, make loads of money, and then actually try and preserve culture somehow and protect it, you know, for future generations. Mm. And he sees the importance in that, which is, you know, a rare thing actually.
I've actually got some work that's really fragile, and it's in Yorkshire by a Californian artist called Chuck Arnoldi, and it's made of twigs.
Really?
And I had to have it restored. It cost a fucking fortune, but it's restored because it just started, the twigs started falling apart. Had to be put back together again.
Could you not use your bendy devil to kind of bend them all back together?
No, the bendy devil sits by on my desk in Whitstable.
Actually, I want to see this bendy devil.
I know, we need to get a picture
of
the
bendy devil. It's a little bendy toy. Actually, I have said it on Loose Women about my bendy toy, and they look at me as if I'm completely mad. Because most people go, oh, I've got a lucky this, that, and I go, oh, I've got devil bendy.
When we went upstairs earlier, you've got a work which I really loved by Patrick Caulfield.
Mm. Yeah.
And have you got a lot of his work, or is that...
No, it's just that one.
Right, and what's the story behind that one?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay, great.
I just like it.
I love it too.
Yeah, I've always liked Patrick Caulfield's work. I love all the interiors. They're fabulous.
Me too. And I think in some ways you're like a Michael Craig Martin. It's the same, Patrick Caulfield and Michael Craig Martin. I think
I like the way they distill an object down to being like a...
line.
Like a talisman or like a... oh, God. I've got a lot of old jewellery, and I've got one thing I've got is a Chinese tag, and it's like a really important thing. I've forgotten what it is, but it's when you hold it, it's just really important and means something. It's in bronze, and I just think the best art's like that, or the objects, you just know it's an object of value and of something special when you see it. Mm. Other people might not, of course. With the case of the Devil Bendy, probably not.
Well, we always ask every guest that comes on, what is their touchstone artwork? If they could have an art heist and you wouldn't get in trouble, you could steal something and take it home and live with it forever.
And also, we can help you with like a big van or a crane or anything. It doesn't have to be small. Yeah. It can be anything you want.
What would that be?
An artwork that I could have that I haven't got.
Yeah. Hmm. Like your touchstone. Is there an artwork in the world that you're like, whenever you're in that city, you would go and visit that, or you'd see that sculpture somewhere and you want to take that?
That is a really difficult question. I was thinking artists that I don't own anything of that I would like, wish I did. Well, I own his books. Was Ed Ruscha.
Oh, wow.
I love Ed Ruscha. But then even looking at the books, is, you know, they are the... Ed Ruscha is just the epitome of cool.
Yeah.
It's just everything he does is so harmonious and it just defies time. So you look at what he's doing now and you look at what he did 20 years ago. The other artist, if I had to choose one, is H.C. Westerman. There's a Westerman at the moment in the Marlborough Gallery upstairs on Bond Street that's just magical. And he has this whole mythological world, you know, he's got these characters. And so, you know, he's dead now. It's a shame. But I wish that I had a Westerman.
Would you take that one from upstairs in the Marlborough Gallery?
I looked at it. I thought, I can't afford it.
How much is it?
I don't know. If it's in Marlborough, I can't afford it.
And the other question we ask every guest is, what is your favourite colour?
Pink.
Obviously. It's all through your house.
Pink. Yeah, shocking pink.
I wasn't sure if you were going to say orange, because your staircase has an amazing orange.
Yeah, well, my hair is a kind of blend of shocking pink and orange, and yeah. I reckon I don't really have a favourite colour, but the colour I like living with is pink.
It is incredibly invigorating.
It is.
I mean, the minute I walked into your house today, I was like, boom, you know, like rushed up from...
Have you always had pink? Is shocking pink or pink always been?
No, but the table we're sitting at is this Saarinen table, and then the chairs that go with it, if you have the matching chairs, it looks like you're in an antique dealer's house. Mm-hmm. So Saarinen did these other chairs that are called conference chairs, and you can have them upholstered in like... tweed that is, you know, of the time. So I had each chair upholstered in a different colour,
which is so cool.
Yeah, and then there's one grey one for the grey person.
But you need the grey one to balance out.
Yeah, the rest you of can have out. Too much of the bright colours.
Did you ever fight against your instincts to live with bright colours? Did you ever find yourself trying to be?
You're like, no, neutral?
No, not really. Well, my previous house had a kind of very electric mauve kitchen, the David Ajay house, and the floor was glitter, white glitter.
Oh, wow.
The bedroom was blue and green, like the one here, like the dressing room here. And that's because when you wash and you get up in the morning, you're feeling like shit. So the colours in the house are very thought through. So when I get up in the morning, I've got the Jake and Dinos madness in the bedroom. But in the bathroom dressing room, I've got wonderful green and blue. So it's calming because I'm feeling cross that I've got to go to work.
So it helps kickstart your day.
Yeah, and then I come down here and the pink's on it, you know, it's ready to go.
I know, like waking up with that in the morning if you're about to have your porridge, it's going to kickstart you. Well, Janet Street Porter, thank
been
you
a dream,
so much.
Dream guest.
We love you, and we could have literally just kept talking to you for hours, but I think we'll do that without the cameras rolling. Not the cameras rolling, the tapes recording. But thank you so much. And for everyone listening, you can see images of all the artists we've discussed today on our Instagram, which is at TalkArt. Are you on Instagram, Janet?
No.
Are you on any social media?
I have to be on Twitter, but not really.
What's your Twitter handle?
At The Real JSP.
And what's your website that people can go on?
JanetStreetPorter.com.
And you're up to speed. That's something you keep up to date, right?
No. Well, the guy that does it is brilliant.
Well, I was just about to say.
Chicky.
I went to your website today just to see what
my website's great.
I loved it. And it's actually just like your house, actually. It's like really bright colours, really pop design.
I met him through Gavin Turk.
Did you?
Yeah, he does a lot. He works a lot with artists.
It's a really good website, actually. And I love the bit where there's a photo of you in Margate, because you have your place in Whitstable.
Is it the dog eating my chips?
The dog eating your chips. What's the dog called again?
Badger.
Badger. I love Badger.
No, that's a great name for dogs.
Yeah, I could put on a video of the badger singing, but that would be too sad.
And also, I love the fact that you were one of the first ever guests we've ever had to our new gallery in Margate.
I've been there.
Oh, yeah, you've been there, actually. You don't count.
I don't count.
Well, you're just like furniture.
Just guff.
Janet Street Porter came to our gallery before it's even opened.
It's fantastic.
And you're a CBE, right?
Yes.
We have to mention CBE, because every time we've had so many like guests.
CBEs,
now,
OBEs,
OBEs, CBEs.
MBEs.
Oh, you don't have to mention it. I've got
we love it. We love
you got it for services to the arts, right?
Journalism, broadcasting, yeah.
Yeah, fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Big love. Lots Cheers, love. Everyone.
We'll
Thanks for
being.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.